Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Good to be back home, back behind the microphone, back in the studio, and just in time for Friday on the front porch. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. After a few years of this, that just seems so silly, but you know what? There are new listeners every day. I'm forever hearing from someone. I just found the show. Welcome. Welcome aboard. It is Friday on the front porch, a little time that ordinarily would be used to kick back and relax and cuss and discuss and carry on, get a little swig from the cyber jug with the cyber corn cob in the top and the cider and the cyber white lightning therein, or maybe some cyber sweet tea with a cyber wedge of lemon squeezed into its cyber glass over the cyber ice. All on this cyber front porch on a beautiful early September Friday in what yet remains of almost level West Virginia. That was a whirlwind trip to D.C. and back. Those things are always tiring. There is never any time for truly sort of decompressing after that sort of thing. We went up Tuesday. We participated in the tar sands protest on Wednesday. I sent some video to the Ustream channel. Had a nice conversation with Bill McKibben. Nice conversation with Daryl Hannah. Met some amazing people, amazingly dedicated, committed people. The folks participating in the tar sands protest were not the usual suspects. There were a lot of folks my age there and older. Folks who had never really been drawn into this sort of action before, but realizing the gravity that the tar sands pipeline presents, not just for our country, but for Canada and for the world at large, have become active. I think something in excess now of $100,000 in fines have been paid by people who were forced to give up $100 each in order to simply petition the government for redress of grievances in front of the White House. You know, when it gets to that point, I have to say, we're a pretty far cry from what I think the framers were talking about when they crafted the First Amendment and they wrote phrases like petition the government for redress of grievances. But there's a historical precedent. It wasn't too long into the history of the United States before Shay's Rebellion took place, and then, of course, there was the Whiskey Rebellion. Power doesn't like it when the non-powered speak truth to them. And over the past couple of weeks, truth has indeed been spoken. I met there a lady from Amherst, Massachusetts, who had come to Washington, D.C. at the tender age of 84 years old, who said, "I am here for my grandchildren because I want them to have a planet to live on." That had some resonance with me. We still haven't figured out how to colonize the moon or Mars or anywhere else yet. The Earth is the only place, good old terra firma, where human life can exist. And yet in the name of profits and in the name of quarterly dividends and in the name of jobs, that's J-A-W-B-Z-Z-Z, jobs, we continue to defecate in our nest. For the whole planet is, in fact, is it not, our nest? Yeah, I've become downright cranky about protecting the planet for the sake of human life. Downright cranky. You'll be hard-pressed to find me talking about defending the planet for birds or beetles or butterflies or kitty cats or anything else. I'm very, and I'm sure it's a character flaw for some of you, as far as I'm concerned. You'll think me insufficiently sensitive. But I'm in this for the humans. Go, humans, go! That's not to say I don't like cats and bats and birds and bullfrogs and butterflies and stuff like that. But ultimately, it's a philosophical question of if a tree falls in the forest and there's no human there to hear it, did it make a sound? And if there's no corporation there, did it make a profit? I think, I hope, you get my meaning by that. It was an amazing time to be in D.C. I'd love to have stayed for a couple of more days just to watch the tar sands protest come to what I think will be a conclusion this weekend. It is inspiring to see action like that. And you know what? Apparently, it was inspiring even to Barack Obama. Yep. I should have known there was something in the works today when one of the first things I saw upon arising was a video from, what's the name of this crowd? It's some clean, cold bunch of freaks. But, yeah. The scene, a boxing ring.
Our economy, our workforce, they've all taken some big hits. But this is America. With more energy from coal, the fuel that supplies nearly half our electricity affordably, we'll keep energy costs in check, jobs in America, and together we will power the next great comeback. Clean coal, that's America's power.
Yeah, God, that was disgusting. That'll put you right off your breakfast. But I should have known there were, because those things happen and then something else happens. I can only explain that that way. That, by the way, is an unlisted YouTube video. The scene, like I said, is a boxing ring with a guy in a suit down on the mat. A woman in a cap and gown reeling into the ropes. That's right. If we blow up some more mountains, America's economy will get all better because that means jobs. Jesus Christ. When in fact it's the exact opposite, really. When there's less mountaintop removal in Appalachia, there are actually more coal mining jobs. Because a D9 Caterpillar and some high explosives can do a lot more than any one working miner can do. Jobs! It's about the jobs! Gotta have some jobs! Some cold jobs! Yeah, we got a t-shirt for sale in convenience stores around here. And really, I mean, if you were in the coal industry, would you wear this? I'm just asking. It's apparently a promotional item for that stupid television show, that so-called reality television show about mining coal. It's a black T-shirt. And on the front in big white letters, it says coal. And on the back, it says, mining coal's about all I knows. Would you advertise that? Really? But no. By God, the tar sands protest, and this is not a levying of blame. This is, no, I'm proud of what happened. I'm proud of what's been going on. Because I think, at least in part, the tar sands protests have pushed Barack Obama to be the president Barack Obama wants to be. Because Barack Obama's Office of Management and Budget today delivered a letter to EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson telling her, not asking, telling her to withdraw rulemaking that would have saved in excess of 40,000 American lives per year. I'll share the whole letter with you in a moment. That would have prevented something like 11, 15,000 preventable heart attacks a year. Yeah, the Barack Obama administration said, you know what? Can't have that. Can't have those Americans not dying from breathing coal filth. Because it'd be bad for jobs. Jobs. Gotta have us some jobs. This is not, of course, to play down the job situation in the United States. It is rather in the way of pointing out the foolhardiness of thinking that a toxic, futureless industry like coal can actually have something to do with those aforementioned jobs. No, the letter went out today. Yeah, Texas Betsy asking about mining coal's about all I knows. And they complain about being called ignorant hillbillies? I know, Betsy. I know. No, the letter went out from the Executive Office of the President, Office of Management and Budget, Washington, D.C., 20503. Administrator, Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, dated September 2, 2011. Dear Administrator Jackson, on July 11, 2011, the Environmental Protection Agency submitted a draft final rule reconsideration of the 2008 Ozone Primary and Secondary National Ambient Air Quality Standards for review by the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs under Executive Orders 13563 and 12866. The President has instructed me to return this rule to you for reconsideration. He has made it clear that he does not support finalizing the rule at this time. That statement's pretty clear, isn't it? Now, bear in mind, when this rulemaking was announced, it was announced, as I noted, that it would save 40,000 people a year from dying unnecessarily. So, let's read that sentence in that context. The President has instructed me to return this rule to you for reconsideration. He has made it clear that he does not support saving the lives of 40,000 American citizens per year. Because that's what it means. No, really. He has made it clear that he does not support preventing 15,000 heart attacks per year. What do you make of this man? What do you make of this administration? I don't know anymore. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting real close. I think I'm pretty well committed at this point. Because, see, look, well... I'm committed this far. Look it. Barack Obama is not going to win the state of West Virginia in November of 2012. Ain't gonna happen. He couldn't even win the primary here in 2008. That's because 21% of voters in the Democratic primary said, I don't think America's ready for a nigger in the White House. I mean, this is West Virginia, okay? Just, you got to deal with it. He ain't going to win West Virginia in 2012. So that means I can just, you know what I am? I'm going to vote in the primary. I'll vote in the Democratic primary. And I'll go and I'll leave Governor blank, and I'll leave President of the United States blank. I've got one county commissioner I'm willing to vote for. That may be the only vote I cast on that entire ballot. And the empty spots on that ballot will be rather noisy in the end. There will be no primary challenge to Barack Obama, so I'll say it right now. I see no purpose in anybody voting for Barack Obama in the primary. Why bother? He's going to be the nominee. They'll go down to Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the most anti-union states in the United States, a city that ain't got one, not one, no sir, not one, no how, no way, not one unionized hotel, and they're going to have him a little nominating convention. And they're going to nominate Barack Obama to be the President of the United States on the Democratic ticket. Well, they're going to do it without me. I won't be there physically. And I won't be there electorally either. So let us continue with the letter from Cass Sunstein. OIRA shares EPA's strong and continued commitment to using its regulatory authorities, including the Clean Air Act, the Act, to protect public health and welfare. Over the last 2.5 years, EPA has issued a significant number of rules to provide such protection. Such protection. We also recognize that the relevant provisions of the Clean Air Act forbid EPA to consider costs in deciding on the stringency of national ambient air quality standards, both primary and secondary. Nonetheless, we believe that the draft final rule warrants your reconsideration. We emphasize 3 related points. 1. Under the Act, finalizing a new standard now is not mandatory and could produce needless uncertainty. Whatever shall I do? 5-year cycle for review of national ambient air quality standards. The current cycle began in 2008, and EPA will be compelled to revisit the most recent standards again in 2013. The new scientific work related to those forthcoming standards has already started. A key sentence of Executive Order 13563 states that our regulatory system must promote predictability and reduce uncertainty. In this light, issuing a final rule in late 2011 would be problematic in view of the fact that a new assessment and potentially new standards will be developed in the relatively near future. Do I need to provide the translation? Oh, hell, why not? What in God's name do you think you're doing promulgating an air pollution ambient air quality standard in the middle in June of 2011 when the election cycle's already started? The other part of this is a bit of a con. Well, we're going to be reviewing them in 2013 anyway. What's the hurry? Well, in 2012, according to viable and mathematically solid statistics, that's 40,000 dead and 15,000 heart attacks and God knows however much other crap like asthma and death. Yeah, death. Those 40,000 people probably weren't going to vote for this president anyway. The other part of it is, well, see, we'll revisit it in 2013. And then, when he doesn't have to worry about being reelected anymore, the president's going to be that real liberal you've been hoping for all along. Part two. The draft reconsideration necessarily depends on the most recent recommendations of the Clean Air Scientific Advisory Committee, CASAC, which in turn rely on a review of the scientific literature as of 2006. Executive Order 13563 explicitly states that our regulatory system must be based on the best available science. You understand that Executive Order 13563 is an Obama administration executive order, right? As you are aware, work has already begun on a new and forthcoming scientific review based on the best available science. We urge you to reconsider whether to issue a final rule in late 2011 based on evidence that is no longer the most current, when a new scientific assessment is already underway by the president's hoped-for donors in the coal, oil, and gas industries. No, I added that part. Under your leadership, EPA has taken a series of strong and unprecedented steps to protect public health by reducing harmful air pollution in general and ozone in particular. I mean, if you're Lisa Jackson, aren't you feeling like Cass Sunstein is just patting you on the head and just giving you a little slap on the fanny and saying, "Now run along, little lady. There's work to be done by the men folks." For example, EPA and the Department of Transportation recently finalized the first joint rule reducing air pollution, including ozone, from heavy-duty trucks, with overall net benefits of $33 billion. EPA also filed, so this turns into a little bit of a press release about how cool EPA is, and how so, you know, maybe it's a little over the top. To be trying to save another 40,000 Americans who would otherwise die. I mean, really, at some point it's just too much. As noted, Executive Order 13563 emphasizes that our regulatory system must promote predictability and reduce uncertainty. Well, you see, you could reduce a lot of uncertainty by making 40,000 Americans feel more less uncertain about whether they would live to see 2013. Executive Order 12866, incorporated in Executive Order 13563, states that each agency shall avoid regulations that are inconsistent, incompatible, or duplicative with its other regulations. Executive Order 12866 also states that the administrator of OIRA shall provide meaningful guidance and oversight so that each agency's regulatory actions are consistent with the president's priorities. In light of these requirements and for the foregoing reasons, I am requesting at the President's direction that you reconsider the draft final rule. That's a little disturbing. So So we can take it then that the president's priorities do not include saving the lives of 40,000 Americans who will die because this rule will not go into effect. More generally, the president has directed me to continue to work closely with all executive agencies and departments to implement Executive Order 13563 and to minimize regulatory costs and burdens, particularly in this economically challenging time. The president has instructed me to give careful scrutiny to all regulations that impose significant costs on the private sector or on state, local, or tribal governments. Well, how about the significant cost of death on individuals? Oh, I guess that wasn't in the directive from the instruction from the president. We look forward to continuing to work with you to create, in the words of Executive Order 13563, a regulatory system that will protect public health, welfare, safety, and our environment while promoting economic growth, innovation, competitiveness, and job creation, but doesn't give a good old-fashioned tinker's goddamn about whether 40,000 people a year die in the United States of America from preventable illnesses brought on by air pollution created by things like coal-fired power plants. Sincerely, oh, I added that last part, sincerely, Cass R. Sunsteinstein. You want me to play some music while you go throw up? Because I feel like playing some music while I go throw up. What are we supposed to make of this? I mean, honest to God, barring waking up with a horse's head in his bed, there is no reason for Barack Obama to have done this, except for the fact that he has been battered relentlessly by the for-profit media and their right-wing owners and the right-wing think tanks and the right-wing foundations and the right-wing businesses about how being able to breathe air is bad for their bottom line. God Almighty! I mean, think about this. Now, if you've got to reduce these things, now just work with me here. If you've got to reduce stuff like ozone and particulate matter in the atmosphere that cause people to die, that means retrofitting plants, doesn't it? Yes, it does. Now, Boss Man Wayne has told me on a number of occasions of folks that he knows have said, them damn environmentalists is going to make all the blah, 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 blah. To which Boss Man Wayne has said, hey, dumbass, you've got a good paying job doing retrofitting on a coal-fired power plant to make it less pollutive. Looks to me like them environmentalists got you a job. No. And that's true. This is not a job. It would not be a job killer to pump less filth into the air. It would be a job creator. Continuing to pump the same filth into the air is, however, a people killer. Obvious, one might think. When rules are changed to protect people from things like air pollution and old, filthy, antiquated technology plants have to retrofit to meet new standards, people have to do that work. And because, well, in many instances, there's government money involved to help pay for it, which therefore means that those become Davis-Bacon jobs. which means that those are prevailing wage jobs, which means that those are the kind of jobs that we actually need more of in this country. So that, well, but I have to tell you, it's the human element that bothers me the most. I watched my father, whom I loved dearly, I watched him die of COPD. His heart was weakened. His body tended to fill with fluid. And he drowned on dry land. Anyone who has ever watched a death from COPD knows that it is awful. And I watched my father die. In the end, he had thrown himself halfway out of his bed, trying to lower his head below, just trying to get a breath of air. And that will be the case for many of those 40,000 people. They'll die the same way. And while Barack Obama, after the Upper Big Branch disaster that killed 29 miners, while he did in fact come to West Virginia to the memorial service and did in fact repeat for the West Virginia Coal Association their advertising slogan, "We must remember that coal keeps the lights on," he will not be found at any memorial services for any of the Americans who die because of this specific, craven, gutless, spineless, pathetic, pusillanimous decision to get down and bow and scrape. Before the companies that hate him to begin with. No. No. It's just sad. And of course, here in a place like West Virginia, not a good word for him whatsoever. No, just advertisements saying that if we just burn more coal, we'll put America back to work. Hell, there's not even any scientific relationship between the two things. There's not even a statistical relationship between the two things. But the coal industry can just pump crap like that out there and expect it to be taken for gospel. What the... I'm flummoxed. Now, meanwhile, here in wild, wonderful West Virginia, we're getting ready to kick off the football season. Now, don't everybody who hates football tune away. Don't do that. This has a point. They've got them a new tradition up in Morgantown. Alpha Natural Resources sent them a 350-pound lump of coal. And they're going to touch that lump of coal before every game. Why don't they just pray to it? That's the way this state is. Why don't they just pray to it? How hard did the fellow, and it's been prepared, and a coating's been put on it. Wonder how hard they had to wash that goddamn thing to get the blood off of it. Oh, yeah, it's sickening. Ken Ward has the coverage over at Coal Tattoo. I mean, really sickening. West Virginia University's athletic director, talking about how it just represents hard-working West Virginians and how folks is just going to work. The players are just going to work when they run through the stadium. No mention of the fact that the players are going to work for no pay. Yeah, there's an idea from Texas Betsy. We need a university to name its mascot the Suns and go touch. Hey, how about the Arizona State Sun Devils? Maybe they can touch a solar panel. Oliver Luck played quarterback for the Mountaineers back in the late 70s. And he went on to become a Rhodes Scholar, got himself a law degree at the University of Texas. Played a little football for the Houston Oilers. And they're going to have a walk. See, and this is just shameless copycatting. Down in the SEC, well, like they walk through the Magnolia Grove or Oak Grove or something like that, going to the stadium at the University of Mississippi. And down at the University of Florida, they touch a rock before every game. It's a rock that they started touching after West Virginia handed them their ass in the Peach Bowl one year. And that rock reminds them never again. So they've come up with a walk. It's just a walk through a parking lot. There's no oak trees, no willow trees. It ain't even lined with coal. It's just one lump. But they're calling that walk the man trip. You know, the West Virginia Mountaineers, not the West Virginia coal miners. Ollie Luck said, "The man trip symbolizes the work ethic of our state and how folks go to work every day. This is the same work ethic that we want our teams to display here at WVU in honor of our fans. Miners take the man trip into work every day in our football team." No! Well, miners do. What's next? Are we gonna pull them on a sled dragged by a D9 caterpillar to honor the hard-working people of Mountain Removers? Jesus. It's not even, you know, it's not even an industry in this state anymore. It is, in fact, a religion. But we're not quite done yet. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We will, you know, we'll be having some conversation radio. Clayton writing in. What? Dumbass owners. Just saying. Yeah, I know. Just saying. Me too. Now, wait, but we've got two stories here, really. And I want you to juxtapose these two, please. On the one hand, we've got an Obama administration that cannot bear the thought of letting 40,000 Americans live to see another year. On the other hand, however, another, and there was no letter from Cass Sunstein about this one. This happened last week. Last week, the Obama administration Department of Justice raided, I kid you not, Gibson Guitars offices in Memphis and Nashville, Tennessee. Now, why in God's name would they do that, you might ask? Were they looking for illegal, undocumented immigrant guitar makers? Have you priced a Gibson guitar lately? The ones that are actually made in the United States go for a pretty penny, and that's because the luthiers and the people who work at Gibson are well paid. No. The same Obama administration that doesn't have the guts to stand up for 40,000 Americans who will die in the next 365 days because of coal filth in the air, among other things. Raided Gibson guitars. Factories in Tennessee. Where they seized several pallets of wood. And some computers and electronic files. And some guitars. Because they thought, they surmised, they suspect that the wood was illegally imported from India. Now, just weigh those two together. And at the same time, let's have Sherman set the Wayback Machine for Crisco John Ashcroft. I'm sure you remember this. I'm sure you remember that at the same time that America was scared to, well, facing terrorist attacks, the best thing Crisco John Ashcroft could come up with was to go and bust Tommy Chong, formerly of Cheech and Chong, for a little business enterprise that he had started and was selling online called Chong's Bongs. And with all the vim, vigor, and determination that the Ashcroft Justice Department could muster, they prosecuted Tommy Chong to the fullest extent of the law and put him in prison for bongs. For bongs. I submit to you that this is that. Not a damn bit of difference. While Cass Sunstein and acting at direction of the president says that Americans cannot breathe clean air, well, they do have time to worry about illegally imported wood. Now, bear in mind, Gibson purchased this wood through a rather complicated certification process in India. But the Obama administration felt like every I had not been dotted and every T had not been crossed. Now, you tell me, which would you rather see Barack Obama stand up for? The very lives of several tens of thousands of Americans, or whether Indian regulations had been met to the fullest in the importation of wood? And ultimately, this goes to that question of whether or not you feel like the Earth is a place that only, well, whether human life on the planet matters more than, well, you see what I'm saying? I mean, it is nice to see that there is some pushback coming. It's not just me. Not just us. Jude forwarded this along to me. The Sierra Club wasted no time. Just hours ago, President Obama asked EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson to withdraw the proposed new national ozone standards, delaying until at least 2013 a safeguard that would protect our families from dangerous smog pollution. I'm appalled. This delay will literally cost lives. This issue couldn't be more urgent. Half of U.S. families live in communities where the air is literally unsafe to breathe, and President Obama is looking the other way. Okay, here's the numbers. Maybe I've been wrong all along. A new standard for smog would prevent up to 12,000 premature deaths, 5,300 heart attacks, and tens of thousands of asthma attacks and other serious respiratory illnesses each year. Yet the president has simply kicked the can down the road. Now, what the Sierra Club doesn't say is he did it out of fear, because he does everything out of fear. The man is a walking bundle of nerves. Jesus Christ, he's the president of the United States. He said he wanted to address the nation on one date. The Republican Party said, no, you can't. And he said, you're right, I can't. I'm just the president. Now, if you catch me on another night, maybe I'll say something like, well, you know, just imagine what the Bachman administration would be like. Betsy asking, fear or just lack of spine? The two, somewhere, those are two lines which may appear to be parallel, Betsy, but somewhere out in the infinitude of space they cross. And where those two lines cross, you will find Barack Obama, fear and lack of spine. No guts. And you know, it is especially frustrating for me, because I know people who are genuinely courageous. I met them Wednesday. I met them in a church in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday evening, sitting and waiting to be arrested in the heat of late August, early September, can take a toll on people. I saw an ambulance called to carry someone away who was protesting. Advice was given about the fact that, listen, the cops are being quite humane about this, but it is a time-consuming process, and you will not be allowed to go to the restroom after your arrest or after they have blocked off the area. You might want to consider wearing an adult diaper. That's pretty... Well, it's pretty humiliating. But there were people there who were willing to do that, that those thousands and thousands of others might continue to live upon the planet. Here in Appalachia, I know people who are routinely threatened by the thugs from the coal industry. You know, I talked to Bill McKibben on Wednesday, and he said, some of us, when we were arrested, wore our Obama 08 buttons just to remind us of how far we've come. Because in 2008, we were knocking on doors for Barack Obama, and now we find ourselves knocking on his, begging him to do the right thing. It's not like this is really critically, this is not one of those 51%, 49% decisions. Things like air quality and the tar sands pipeline. These are glaring. These are easy. If your poll star is a matter of simply doing the thing that is right and good. If, however, your primary consideration is the continuation of your political career, because all political careers, since pretty much the 19th century or the early 20th, all political careers end after the presidency. If your goal is the continuation of your political career, I suppose ordinary workaday American lives versus the happiness of corporate CEOs can be a close call. but I don't live in that world, and I suspect you don't either. But I know what the faces of courage look like. They come from all walks of life. They are from all age groups. They are of all varied skin tones and shades. And they have a light in their eyes that far outshines the dull determination of someone who's playing chess on level 17 of a 52-level board. You and I know what courage looks like. And nobody's going to run away and go home as a result of this. It's only going to get worse for President Obama. He is genuinely damaging. And, you know, that's one of those ironic things about politics. The urge to be reelected will often prove to be the one thing that keeps you from being reelected as you try to be all things to all people. I really am. I'm done. I will not vote for this man in my primary, and I will withhold judgment on November of 2012. And I've said that about other candidates, and I have gone through with it. And I can defend it, and defend it I will. I won't tell you what to do because that's not the purpose of this program. But that's what I'm going to do. So there we are. 8 minutes until 7 p.m. here on the East Coast. 8 minutes until 4 on the West Coast. Friday on the front porch here on the Horn. This is listener-supported. Your kind gifts, your kind contributions, your kind donations are what keeps all of this going. And we are at the beginning of a new month with a new goal of a new $2,500 to be raised between now and 28 days from now. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. One of these days, we're going to get done with fundraising. Maybe a week. Maybe 2 weeks. Before the end of the month, and I'm not going to have to say a word about it for about 14 days, and won't that be nice? But we'll take a little break, and we'll come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
You know, the last couple of days really have been a big double bonus for the poison and filth industries. You know, oil, coal, natural gas, you know, the frackers. Why? Well, obviously, what happened today. But also yesterday with the ballyhooed failure of a solar plant, a solar power company out in California. So, you know, don't look for any more big hopeful Department of Energy R&D loans for solar. Not for a man with no courage. I mean, really? I'm just asking. Where's the courage? Oh, wait. Well, the Department of Justice sued some banks today. Yeah, that's not going to mean a lot unless folks can breathe. I'm just being cranky now, I guess. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hold on, I'm at the Turkey border playing Angry Birds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the new Anthony Bourdain show Layover in November.
Yeah, I've read about what now. What is this? What is it comprised? What
I think it's basically, it's a smart idea too. It's the time that Anthony Bourdain has to spend in flights during layovers, and they're going to compose a show out of it.
Oh, that'll be fun. It's not going to be a recurring thing.
Yeah, I think what I'm not sure how many episodes they plan on. And then also, when you do these spin-offs, I only expect it to last like one or two seasons or something. I don't expect it to go as long as No Reservations, but I mean it should be pretty fun.
Looks like.
Yeah, well, you know, we've had a busy week this week with all the announcements with the EPA. And the Gibson factory, which is something regarding Gibson that I think people should take note about. Gibson and Fender, those companies are ruthless to other guitar companies. I remember I was listening to I was at a guitar convention, and Paul Reed Smith was there, and he was talking about how many lawsuits he had to go through just to fight over Gibson, just trying to make a guitar. He said he nearly lost his business. He said, I never want to deal with those guys ever again. It was an experience because, I mean, and basically, you know, it was over little patent tiffs that really did look nothing like a Gibson. And I think that's why a lot of people put their support behind a company like that.
Well, look, I mean, their stuff is incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
But it's also pretty high quality, and it is American made. And you know, you can, but then again, for now, this is just my taste. For an acoustic guitar, I would much rather have a Martin, but that's me. I'll never have either one because I can't justify owning either one. Not when the majority of what I can play is scales.
Right. I hear what you're saying.
I think this was just a juxtaposition. But, I mean, it really did. The first thing I thought of was Chong's bongs. Because apparently this is a matter of quibbling over whether or not Indian law was followed to the last iota.
Well, you know, that wood thing is very, very tricky. I remember I had a custom-made guitar, and there were specifics of the kind of wood that I had to... That was on the certain list and then the not so iffy list. I mean, I guess that's the price you pay with a lot of regulations.
I think this was primarily ebony.
But I mean that's the price you pay with regulations, and that's why I think people need to understand when you do regulations like that, there is going to be this price and this kind of sacrifice that we all pay. The more regulations we have, and it brings to my point of calling, which is the fact that when you were talking about it was a no-brainer for Obama to he wasn't going to get any pushback on the smog regulations and stuff like that. With people and with a climate like this, I don't think so. With a climate like this. The fact that the media airwaves are slammed 24/7, Bob, and I've been listening to a bit of conservative radio this week. If he was to make the moves that he was to make, I mean, it would just be nonstop talk about that.
Nonstop talk about something negative about him all the time.
I know, but it makes the climate worse. It gives him more headlines for not being agreeable. It just loops on top of each other.
And he's the president of the United States, and he can very easily say, I did this to save 12,000 lives. I did this to stop 5,000 heart attacks.
He can say that, but he needs to say it 12,000 times, just like what they do on right wing media.
Well, yeah, and this reminds me of something that your member of the fellow member of the David fraternity, David in
yeah.
Tennessee, said earlier today about him backing down on the date of his speech. He said, it's absolutely eating me alive, he said, because the back down, he says, see, we were the Republicans get to crow, see, we were right all along. Give us a majority in the Senate and the White House, and we'll really fix things. And he said, lies, of course, but with their megaphone bellowing, you get it. And there's absolutely an element of truth in it.
But see, Bob, that's what we're up against. And I want to remind people who are really, really into the environment and about the pipeline and stuff like this, that we are the minority when it comes to like that in a climate where business is hurting because of the propaganda that we're going against. People really do believe, and they constantly believe that businesses and corporations are looking out for them. In their best interest, and when they look, and the way they're able to frame it and make environmentalists and people who care about the environment look selfish, it's diabolical, but it works, especially in downturn economic times.
Well, I understand that. Truly, I do, David.
But Bob, see, here's the thing: a lot of environmentalists, they don't get that.
Well, first of all, let me clear something up right quick.
Yeah.
If I am never referred to, and the people I work with, for instance, are never referred to and I'm not speaking for them, I'm just, this is subjective on my part, are never called environmentalists again. It will be too soon. Because environmentalist is another name that the polluting people, the toxic people, the nasty poisoning people, that's a word, that's a name they gave us. It's kind of like the Spaniards naming Indians Indians because they thought they were in freaking India. Okay?
Right. Well, I mean,
my purpose in my advocacy is in regard to basic essential human rights. And I will insist forevermore on being referred to as a human rights activist or a human rights campaigner because everything I believe in, everything I stand for is related directly to the ability of humans to continue to inhabit an increasingly threatened planet, David.
I hear what you're saying, but I mean a lot of organizations and a lot of activists still refer to themselves as environmentalists.
And that's because they're more than happy to wear their slave names. And I'm not being a smartass about it. I will not wear a name that somebody else gave me.
Right.
You know, the opposite response to that is, okay, you want to call me a tree hugger? I'm a tree hugger. And I'll wear that proudly. And that's okay, too. But to call, you know, I'm not an environmentalist because I'm trying to save humans, not environments. Granted, the human can't exist without the environment. I'm down with that.
Right.
But as I've said before, I have no interest in preserving the planet for a race of 6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches 3 million years from now.
I hear what you're saying, but When you're in a downturn economy like this, it's a tough sell to keep people's eye on the ball all the time where it concerns the environment.
It's not as hard a sell as you think it is, David, if you frame it in terms of life versus death. These bastards who want to continue pumping filth into the air and pumping filth into the water, well, they're aligned with the forces of death. I wish to be aligned with the forces of life.
Well, see, not for your community, but what I'm saying is for outside that area that hasn't experienced the same way where I use the metaphor of somebody in a dentist chair. They haven't felt the pain that you have, is what I'm saying. And that's where we face ourselves, Bob. The majority of the people have not felt the pain of environmental dangers. That's true, Bob. I mean, where I live.
But I mean, do you have to feel yes. pain to understand that you can't breathe smoke?
Yes.
Do you have to watch your neighbors and your children and people in your small communities? Do you have to watch them die? And see, that's the thing. Around here, they are dying. People are dying. Their disease walks the land in West Virginia. And the problem with that, the problem is that even when people, them things happen. I mean, I will never forget, I will never, ever forget that one woman. I think she had just been widowed when she was interviewed by Anderson Cooper or whoever after Upper Big Branch. And they said, aren't you angry? Right. Well, no. We's always knowed coal mining's dangerous business. It's just part of our culture.
That's the most dangerous thing. We've been so desensitized to environmental dangers in this world, not just this country, this whole entire world. And we're juggling so many objects here. It's like, where do you start? And how do you start the process? And how do you get people on board? It's a lot more challenging than I think a lot of people who are inside that bubble. And what I'm saying is if you go outside that bubble and the people who have never experienced those kind of environmental hazards that others have to the degree that you have and, people living in communities such as that, it's a hard sell because it goes back to the fact they have to feel it.
God, that's a sad conclusion to reach. Maybe you may be right.
I mean, if you look at it, it's the same thing with war, right? Let's go to that. It's the same thing with war. Everybody just keeps sending more and more people on the battlefield, no matter what. And you can have an argument with someone. You know, I was talking to someone about they were really, really fetishizing, gotta get Gaddafi. You know, he was fetishizing, and I brought up and I said, you know, this news story about the Libyan rebels taking prisoners, just sub-Africans and people in Libya with black skin, with dark-colored skin. This is bad news. And he went after me. He's like, what do you mean? Well, I'll tell you what, it's not worse than Gaddafi. And this guy was a quote-unquote progressive. I mean, that's what we're agreeing with.
We've got to remember, we've got a word for that, David. Cruise missile liberal.
Yeah, cruise missile liberal. I think, you know, but I think more so with someone like him, I don't think he was a cruise missile liberal. I just think he was just afraid of chasing after the shiny object, if you will. I mean, you just realize this is the frame and I'm sticking with it because, I mean, I guess some people stay sane that way. That's my way of rationalizing that. I don't look at people as like misinformed people or stuff like that. I just look at people who go in that direction. They've decided that they're going to go with that perception because if they go down another rabbit hole, they'll just go insane. And also, you know, the emotional investment with that kind of political position, once, you know, we've had that discussion before, Bob. It's hard to admit when you're wrong. It's hard to give up some of that territory where you could say, yeah, maybe you're right on this. But I think that's where we find ourselves. And, you know, we look at a candidate like Obama and all our hopes and aspirations for someone like that. But still, part of my thing with this is I think we, most of us, we sort of expect a little too much from a president in the climate that he's in right now. And I don't know what he can do about that because the media is going to go nonstop on him.
Well, but David, isn't it possible that he's expecting a little too much from me then?
You know what? That may be. I mean,
because I'm running out of excuses.
Yeah.
I'm running out of patience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm running out of faith. And this one today was a real thumb in the eye. And if you want, well, you just don't care about jobs. No, I care about people having jobs. But I don't know many working corpses.
I think the reality is, and this is what a lot of progressives and liberals are going to hate to hear, but I think the reality is we've been so corporatized as a society, the fact that we have media airwaves going 24/7, never underestimate that at all. And, you know...
No, but that's all he's been. All the way back to the Shirley Sherrod preemptive firing.
Right.
Remember, she got canned preemptively because he was afraid not of what Glenn Beck had said, but because he was afraid of what he might say in the future. Now, in this instance, the megaphone has been ramped up considerably already. But again, he's not just afraid of on the heels of the lousy job numbers for August. What do we get? Well, we certainly got to pollute the. We got to allow more pollution to enter the air because that's the job creating pollution is what that is. Fear. He, for reasons that you are correct in identifying, David.
Yeah.
He's afraid of that. He's afraid of that megaphone. He's afraid of the steady drumbeat. Of a corporatized for-profit media that goes simply relentlessly. But you know what? There is nothing worse than living in fear. There is a freedom that comes from standing up and saying, I will be afraid no longer. And who knows what he might, on the one hand you say, well, who knows what he might be able to do if he'd stop being afraid. No, see, that's the other thing, David.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced of this now. I'm just convinced.
Yeah.
Barack Obama, as we speak, is being exactly the president Barack Obama wants to be. Let's just get that understood. He wouldn't be more like FDR if he had 61 reliable votes in the Senate and a majority in the House. He would not be. He would be the same guy. He comes from the Chicago school.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get out of it. You can't work in the University of Chicago without some of that Milton Friedman filth rubbing off on you. He believes in the myth of the perpetual infinite free market. He just does.
I think though that a big part of what a lot of critics of this administration just seem to shake off is the fact that I think once you get in the White House and once you look at the investor tally sheet, you're going to have to do what your investors tell you or they'll pull out immediately. And they'll sink you. They'll make you look like they'll say, okay, you're going to be John Huntsman.
Well, then that's a failure of the system. But the thing is, it didn't seem to obtain with George W. Bush, did it? I mean, he bullied right through and bulled on ahead and devil take the hindmost. And for the most part, he got whatever he wanted. But on the other hand, we've got a consensus maker. We've got a compromiser.
It's okay if you're a Republican and he comes from a dynasty family. I don't know how to say it any other way. I mean, we play by different rules and it's unfair. And that's the reason why we never get that much traction. Look at the way the media treats Democratic candidates when it comes to the business channels. You know, someone made an interesting point. They said, I was listening to the radio today, they said there are more stock market channels than there are religious TV channels.
Well, that says something.
Yeah, it does say something. I mean, that's what we worship first and foremost. And I would wager though that the religious channel, they worship the dollar also. It's just guised as a cross symbol. So you count up those channels and basically the religious industry is tied to the free market as well.
Well, and the prosperity gospel's part of that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I'm out of excuses. I just am.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I think the biggest problem though is that when you look at what we want Barack Obama to do, and in terms of what if he starts moving now and he decides he's going to have those big losses, and quite frankly, I don't think it's going to satisfy the base whatever he does because he's going to have those losses along the way, and that's where a lot of people don't understand a certain amount of politics because, you know, you look at the blogs and you look at the writings and you look at the op-eds and they want to make politics look like a fast-moving game like football.
Or a or view it as a horse race, certainly.
Yeah, view it as a horse race, and that's the problem, Bob. You can't view it as a horse race, and it is, you know, it's painful.
I recognize the limitations. You know, the Republican Party said it early, and they were deadly in earnest about it. Their sole-minded goal is to cause him to fail to be reelected in 2012. I get that. And that's because they are no good, soulless, anti-American, fascist, punk-ass bastards.
We definitely agree on that.
But the only way you face down bullies like that is to be as big and bad as they are. And to go toe-to-toe with them. And he never goes toe-to-toe with them. I mean never. For media, for reasons of media or fear or just a cravenness of spirit, he never goes toe-to-toe with them.
I think, you know, it's just that they know. They must be screaming. A lot of the true blue Democrats and progressives and liberals who are in Washington must be screaming at the walls because they understand how unfair it is. You know, I heard on the radio today that they continue to consider Barack Obama far left, and they paint him as far left. And the bumper sticker has stuck so well now that no matter what you say to somebody who's a Republican who believes that frame, it's been hammered into their head. No matter how civil and polite they seem with their answers, it's still hammered in their head. Well, he is to the left. Like, what are you talking
of,
about?
Yeah, of Mussolini. Maybe.
But, you know, that's the diabolical side of programming that we're in now. And I guess the problem here is that, which is really, really scary, but I think that's the side that the Democrats want to go on.
You know, at least a decade and a half ago, or more, well, more 2 decades ago, pretty nearly, mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton spoke of a vast right-wing conspiracy. And she was right. But you can't even get Barack, you know, look, how many things do I have to cite? You know, I was real proud of him early on when he called out Rush Limbaugh. But what did he do? He backed off. He gave that one speech where he was a little bit angry. I remember I was in a hotel in D.C. at the time. What did he do? He backed off. We're talking about a man with no courage to his convictions. And I'm not going to blame the Republican Party for that, David. That's a character flaw that's all his own.
I hear what you're saying, but I still think it goes back to the fact that, you know, the Democrats don't have that kind of lockstep base that the Republicans do, and there's always going to be someone that's going to be out there pointing out and saying, well, you didn't get this, and you didn't get that, and you didn't get this, and you didn't get that, and then everyone just looks around and says, well, screw it. And then they just...
Well, I mean, look at this other story that's out today. It's the other big story, David.
Yeah.
U.S. government sues 17 banks over massive mortgage losses at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Mm-hmm.
How long until they back off of that one, too?
You know what? You're probably right, because, again, we don't control the media.
Because the media message, the right-wing for-profit media message will be... Well, Barack Obama's going to prevent these banks from creating jobs.
Tell me
I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
You are not wrong on that. There is no speech that Barack Obama can give that will satisfy anyone.
If Barack Obama climbed a burning tree and saved a kitten in it, the Republican Party would be standing there with its right-wing for-profit media screaming, the profit sector could have hired someone and created a job to save that kitten.
If Barack Obama brought back Jesus, they would say...
Wrong one! Nail him up!
they would say, oh, look at this guy. He's playing Mr. Righteous Hanger-On.
Who's that brown-skinned terrorist wearing the sandals palling around with Barack Obama?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I know,
yeah.
David.
Yeah.
Well, have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too, Bob.
All right. Take care, David. Bye now. And I understand what David's getting at. Nobody's hammered on the media more than I have. But sometimes... Well, you just got to say what the... Comes from a movie, doesn't it? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Not much. You brought up a couple of good points. I heard something interesting today also. Somebody pointed out that... Place not your faith in princes.
Yeah.
And they mentioned this town hall meeting they were having in Vermont with Bernie Sanders. And somebody in the crowd got up to make a nasty comment about Lockheed Martin being invited up there. And Bernie jumped to his feet and says, you don't understand. These are good jobs. And you think about it. It's politics of the possible. You know, you have to make your bargain with the devil somewhere along the line. And
Yeah, but there's a difference, Cossack, between making a bargain with the devil and going into open business with him.
Well, it's true. And trust me, I am not someone to stand up for Barack Obama. He's just an out-and-out sellout. He is in open business with the devil. He's not just... He's not just making a deal with him.
No, and see, I mean, there are so many elements of this, Cossack. For instance, consider, you know, there's that whole old FDR apocryphal story about, I love what you're doing, I like your idea, now make me do it.
Yeah.
Well, what do thousands of people in front of the White House for 2-3 weeks consecutive, what does that constitute if not make me do it?
Well,
and yet, are any of us going to be surprised when he? Because I don't want anybody to be surprised when he signs off and says, "Oh yes, by all means, build that tar sands pipeline. That'll bring jobs to America."
But it's not tar sands; it's oil sands.
Yeah, and it wasn't Operation Iraqi Liberation either. No. Oil.
And another thing, they had a high school down here in the near vicinity that handed down a decision that they weren't going to start games anymore with a prayer. Can you guess what kind of reception that got?
Oh, dear God.
The earth's going to open up and suck us all down to hell because we ain't praying in front of you.
Yep. And this one woman started a Facebook page that, we're gonna take that moment of silence and we're going to pray the Lord's Prayer. We're going to pray it loud enough that everyone can hear
it. We're going to scream it. We're going to scream for Jesus.
Yep.
Because we're Christians and we're being persecuted.
And so bad that the ACLU went out there and said, look, we didn't have anything to do with this. This was a school deciding on its own. We didn't do diddly.
Yeah, that school board must have been done, must have been tired of being school board members.
I mean, good God. The reaction was just so over the top. Insane. Yeah. Gotta play doorman to the cat.
Oh, I understand.
But no, it's totally insane. It was so out of proportion to the fact that they just weren't gonna have public prayers to start off their varsity game. Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, you're not supposed to have prayers anyway, organized prayer. I mean, that's the law of the land. But,
well, you know, come on, it's Florida. They were a member of the old Confederacy. Dude, let's remember.
Yeah, well, this is L.A., Lower Alabama.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's not a far cry different. It's a different sort of thing, but it's not that different. Betsy sent me a story. Cash-strapped school district in Pennsylvania turns to dangerous shale gas drilling for money. Blackhawk School District near Pittsburgh. The district board voted in July to lease 160 acres of the district's land to Chesapeake Energy for $300,000. If Chesapeake successfully extracts gas from the district's property, the schools would get an additional 15% royalty on the profits. On the profits. See, the natural gas industry is one of the skeeviest there is. That's 15% on the profits.
Oh, but they'll jiggle a book so there won't be any profits.
Right.
Yeah. And have you noticed the increase of these ads about, oh, we extract gas for, you know, safely, and it's way below the water table, and we never interfere with water. You notice those?
Yeah, except for the fact that you got to use water to get the gas out, and it's
yeah.
never useful as water again. You know, that kind of right.
And yeah, this is these ads are from ExxonMobil, and we know how honest they are.
Sure. And again, let's reiterate that the shutoff valves on the tar sands pipeline will be 20 miles apart.
That could be an awful long time getting to that shutoff valve.
Well, I'm sure it's computer controlled or whatever, but still, that's a 20-mile gap. That's a 20-mile spill.
Yeah.
And God forbid a valve should fail. Because we've never seen that happen before, have we?
Oh, no.
I mean, that didn't happen in the Gulf of Mexico, where a shutoff mechanism went.
No, that never happened. I mean, really now, people, come on. I mean, this is bitumen, for God's sake. This stuff is like sludge.
Yeah, and as noted, they're going to use what? Yeah. They're going to use frack gas, Marcellus shale gas, that they're going to pump up there to heat the make the oil thin enough to, oh, my God. And the thing is, once you realize something like that, Cossack, it's nothing. It really is. It is about nothing but profit. It has nothing to do with the price of gasoline in the United States. It will not drive prices down any more than drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge would have driven prices down.
No. Or drilling in the Everglades.
Oh yeah, that was funny. Yeah, Michelle Bachmann says she wants to drill for oil in the Everglades. You know who stepped up and pushed back on that? Well, it wasn't President Barack Obama.
Oh, no.
It was Representative Alan West. Her fellow teabagger. Oh, I'm going to have her straightened out real quick.
Oh, but we can do it safely.
Well, wait till she tells him, you know, well, there's a line in Blazing Saddles. Sorry about the up yours. You remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Well, the weekend is upon us and college football begins, so
yeah.
At least there's a diversion. I get to watch the Coal Bowl on Sunday. There seems to be a concerted effort to keep me from rooting for my beloved Mountaineers.
Now, how long do you think it will be before they become the Coloniers?
Well, no, we're just going to change our name. It's going to be the West Virginia Miners.
Mountaintop Removers.
No, they're miners. Miners. You've got to call them miners. Can't call them mountain removers, even if they are. Got to call them miners, because that's what these heroic miners.
Nothing heroic in blowing the top off a mountain.
No. Well, Cossack, brother, have yourself a good weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right, we'll talk soon.
All right.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida or Lower Alabama, depending on how you view things. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so your friend from Sweden, you know, I thought about him because I'm feeling that, you know, cognitive distortion coming back again.
Yep.
Because shit is just off the chain. I mean, listen, Obama and his smog rollback, it's like, okay, if he rolls back these things like he's saying, the polluters will save, like, I don't know, $18 billion compared to the $100 billion that it's going to cost to take care of all the sickness.
Well, there's that too.
You know,
yes.
Like, what in the world? So there's two constituencies.
Well, see that, but that's two places where keeping the same amount of poison in the air will create jobs.
Right, I'm saying the healthcare industry will continue chugging along because you have all these sick ass people, and then the polluters get satisfied, but the people who have to breathe, which is all of us, are just sort of, oh, well. I mean, the thing that's even more disturbing about this is that there was lawsuits at play, and the Obama administration apparently convinced these fools, oh, no, don't worry about it because we're going to deal with this coming up soon. So the various environmental groups pulled back on these lawsuits after Bush left. So he has, like, screwed people over so badly because these lawsuits would have progressed on their own.
Right, but instead, we got suckered.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So it's even doubly hideous with what he did. And I guess he is governing out of fear. I don't know what's going on. But it seems like a really dumb move.
Well, it's a fearful move, Sandra. Or, as noted, maybe he's being exactly the president he wants to be.
Well, but I just still think it's a really dumb move because he continues to alienate. I think he's alienated all of his base now, like absolutely everybody who would normally vote for him must be alienated completely now. Because I saw that the defense, what is that one mainstream environmental organization?
NRDC?
Yeah, I mean, you know. And they're pretty corporatist in themselves, and they sort of are off the handle. The Sierra Malthusian Club, they came out against it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw that.
No, that's okay. I understand why.
The Sierra Club has a history of some flirting with the whole, oh, we must control populations shit that I kind of get nervous about. But anyway.
Yeah, whose population?
Yeah, they had a bit of a problem with that for a while there, but anyway,
but there's a but don't you think, Sandra, that the calculation is still there, where somebody's patting Barack Obama on his shoulder and saying, "Don't you worry, Mr. President. What do you think they're going to do? Vote for Michelle Bachmann?"
Well, no, but it's funny because there's this one Financial Times writer that I read, Martin Wolf. I always read him now because his tune has changed. He was famous for a book about how globalization will save the world, hell, a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he's singing a different tune now. I mean, he's pretty smart anyway. So he had this one line in there. I don't know the quote. I'll just paraphrase. But he was saying, well, you know, we have two problems, you know, with the sort of fantasy, the leaders in Europe and also President Obama, who is the president of a sort of fantasy USA. I was rolling because he's not one to go all political, but he's suggesting that Obama thinks that he's governing a U.S. that doesn't exist, which is this land of compromise. So everyone is getting into the game of looking at this man as like, well, you know, what the hell? You know, there is no compromise. I mean, you're working with people who are going to do a Lenin, you know, anything we can do to make it worse, you know, kind of plan. And he doesn't seem to be getting it. I just don't get this smog thing. How in the world, how is this, I mean, who's pressuring him? Is it the money people? Is that what it is? Because he has to get money?
And that's the part that doesn't make any sense to me either, because the coal industry, as a result of this, is not going to get off his ass. The same billboards that are beside interstates in West Virginia are going to stay up. The Barack Obama no jobs zone.
Well, I mean, but is another thing that I wanted to mention right quick, but is this not, if I may go back to history a bit, is this not starting to have a real feel of Hindenburg and Heinrich Brüning about it? I'm sorry. I'm getting really...
Well, now that you mention it, yes.
Oh, mind you, Brüning, though, was kind of interesting because he wanted to divide up some land and get that to the poor people, so maybe not. Maybe not him. But you know what I'm saying, that period, Hindenburg. I know he was senile, and Obama's not senile, but still, it's just starting to, with the economy and the weak-ass leadership and the sort of missteps and what's coming up, because we can see it in the distance, shit. It's like replay, 1929.
Yeah, I remember, there's that one famous photo of a woman with a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks.
Oh, I know. Well, yes. Yeah,
where she's burning them in her stove for heat.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, obviously we're not dealing with that sort of, that is not the aspect of the Weimar Republic that I'm thinking about. I'm thinking more in terms of bracing ourselves for such a severe disappointment and a veering to the populism of the right, which has replaced any movement for the left. This is a failure of the left. It's so glaring now. And instead of a left movement that we should have, we have a right movement. That's the only movement that's going on.
Right, and
that's the only game in town.
And the whole country winds up going in that direction.
Right, but see, that happened before, though. And, you know, with these sort of economic conditions, you know, obviously, I just fear for the, you know, we always been talking about how the U.S. always has this sort of undercurrent of fascism. And so many episodes where it kind of was trying to come up, doing Roosevelt, you know, and just on and on and on. But, see, weak leadership or the situation we got right now, hey, I can see old Perry just strolling on into White House at this point.
I was about to say the very same thing. Doesn't this just sound like the little fantasy island world of President Perry?
Well, I'm just saying, I just think that... But you know, because I don't really know what Obama thinks he's doing. I mean, because if he thinks he's going to come back from this shit, and do I need to mention the job? Zero? Nothing? Nada? Nothing. Did you see that?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Well, and I think that's why this comes out. I think that's why this announcement coincided. Because you know what? Now that we don't have to worry about that pesky EPA, we can create some jobs.
Well, no, this ain't no jobs gonna be created. I mean, I'm shuddering at the thought of this so-called speech. And once again, you know, I'm thinking, I thought to myself, Negro, you did not let yourself get fucked over again. You know, just on principle now, Bob, I'm like, damn fool, you black, now you fucking with me. Are you looking crazy? Get out. Don't run, go away. Because it's too much. As a black person, I'm just thinking, oh my God, what's happening? I can't even explain myself. I'm so inarticulate. But I can't take it. I can't look at it no more. I'm like, you did what?
You
said okay.
Andy out there in your neck of the woods just pointed out something that I hadn't even thought about. I've been so pissed off all day, it didn't even occur to me. Andy said, you can tell Sandra you have to know this rolling back of the Clean Air Act was going to be controversial because they did it on a Friday before a major weekend holiday. The news cycle's down, and most of Mr. Obama's supporters will be out at the beach enjoying those brewskis.
Yeah, no, the Friday. Yeah, of course. I mean, the Friday, yeah, I mean.
But not just Friday, holiday Friday.
Friday. No, it's incredible. I mean, but it just keeps, the thing about it, and that's why I brought up the whole cognitive distortion thing, it just keeps getting worse. This is the thing. And this is, you know, this is the whole tenor of the call. It's like, oh my God. You know, cause I've been trying to do my work, you know, but I can barely concentrate on my, you know, quote, academics behind this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's intellectually crippling.
Sort of like, oh, I'm trying to figure out, you know, some Unix and looking at the way, you know, websites appear, some sort of interactive design. I mean, it all just seems so, I'm having some sort of existential type of crisis, basically. Because, you know, I just see the abyss. If Perry is president, we got problems. And I'm not talking about from a point of view of the red and blue, you know, campfires, you know, whatever. I'm talking about, I don't even know if this country is going to be recognizable after 4 years of him.
Or eight.
Or eight, yes, what am I saying? Well, why not? Why not stop there? But anyway, I don't know. I just was like, oh, my God. With, you know, because if he thinks this is going to score him bunny points with the polluters, like you said, it ain't.
They hate his guts anyway.
Oh, my God.
And they're not going to stop hating him.
You know, and I don't know why Hindenburg popped up, because Hindenburg, that fool was hella senile and just effed up. And it's just kind of like...
Well, but beyond that, it was because he his government had reached a point of total entropy.
Yeah, no, and it just feels like that is what's, you know, start. And then you kept mentioning that Cat Sons thing. He is a fucking weasel, man. You know that, right? He's really shady with his, we need to use government to, you know, break up groups within the country that we don't like, hell. He's very bizarre.
Yeah, and guess who they apparently don't like? Us. You know what I mean? This is, no, that's the thing. I see this, I see this as that strategy at work.
Yeah, no. It's very, and he's hard. I mean, he's just a really unappealing character.
See, I don't, beyond the Friday, the holiday Friday news dump, Sandra, I see this as very, very symbolic. You're coming toward the close of what has been one of the most significant, well, the most significant so-called environmental protest.
Well, yeah, with the direct
in decades.
Sure, yeah.
And this thing's getting ready to wrap up. And so along, you know, along comes Cass Sunstein at the direction of the president and sticks a finger in Bill McKibben's eye.
Oh, I know. No, it was just, but the thing is, I mean, I just shook my head. I just thought, oh, my God, you got these people being arrested. You know, all kinds of well-known figures. You know, the full, just a lot of activity with that. And this is the response.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you mentioned well-known figures. You know, James Hansen was there.
And I just thought of that Naomi Klein. She got arrested today, you know. So
I got a hug from Daryl Hannah.
Oh, that's good, yeah. However you can get the contacts.
Yeah, I mean, and she, you know, she didn't hesitate. She got arrested.
Right, no, it's just kind of...
84-year-old granny.
Yeah, that's amazing.
There was a woman there wearing a kerchief because her hair had fallen out because she was on chemo. She had a portable oxygen generator air tank on her back, and she was there.
What's amazing, the demographics is trending towards the senior citizens. Amazing, actually. You're saying that there was a lot of people in that generation, right, over 60?
Yeah, but it was what was amazing is it wasn't any one group. I mean, it was old,
right.
Older folks. It was young folks. I mean,
no, but as it should be, because of what we're talking about. Who cares about the economy when there's no world? You see what I mean? It's hard to balance. Economy, world.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about saving jobs until we get done saving lives.
No, but did you get a chance to look at any of that sub-media TV? Did you check any of that?
I saw some of that. It's amazing.
I know. I was just like, oh, my God. Anyway, I thought you might find it.
Well, and that piece of animation you sent just before showtime just blew me away.
Oh, yeah. Shit. That was like, wow. I think it's Argentinian. I'm thinking, good Jesus. Yeah, that one kind of wrecked me for the day, actually.
Yeah, it's in Spanish, it's called The Employee.
Yeah.
And it's, wow. I mean, just,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see. How's it listed on YouTube so folks can go and see it?
Isn't it
it is El Empleo, the
yeah.
Employment. But just on YouTube, look up L-E-L, Empleo, E-M-P-L-E-O.
Yeah, and it's only, I think it's like, what was it, like 6 minutes?
Yeah, 6 minutes and 25 seconds long.
Yeah, so it's a short animation, but... yeah, it was powerful. Some powerful shit. I recommend everyone check that out. You can't really explain it on the radio, so you just have to go and see it. But listen, did you get a chance? I mean, you know, I guess I'm just getting so cynical and just kind of like laughing sardonically at it all. But did you see the article about the Juan Cole stuff?
No.
Oh, man. Okay, so...
Now, bear in mind, I was on the road for a couple of days.
No, so. I understand. That's why I'm sure, you know, you're probably well behind with all the bits and pieces. But Yeah, the whole, Juan Cole as a CIA asset.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so if you look in your email, you'll see the article. I won't go into it because you didn't read it. But it's, it really is suspect in light of his cheerleading for the Iraq war and the Libya war. You know, and he's still trying to call himself a lefty. So it's kind of interesting how it's taken apart. But the connection to the CIA, of course, when it's the left and the CIA, you always hella suspicious. You know what I mean? It's always dubious.
Oh, there's nothing that the CIA is not willing to try to co-opt or control or... Right.
So anyway, I would just...
And there's a long history of co-opting both in academia and media.
Yeah, and then he's forever on Democracy Now. So, of course, you know, I'm fisheyeing that, too. I'm just like, oh, shit, you know, it's all... Yeah, and my other pet thing for the day is...
But the thing is, that was... Now, I'm looking now. That was Amy Goodman dropping the dime on him, right?
Well, she had a little ex-CIA person talking about, you know, because you know how the New York Times came out with this report that the Bush administration was going after Juan Cole because of, well, I guess he had opposition to some policy of theirs, you know?
Yeah.
And they went after him, and it was this article recently talking about who was going after him. Anyway, the person who was CIA was on Democracy Now! Talking about him. But the conversation was really weird because it went to this, well, we've had dealings with Juan in the past. You're like, wait, huh? And it just kind of goes on from there. And I don't understand why, you know, Goodman didn't sort of dive into that a bit more. She's kind
well,
of
you, I mean, you reckon she's a little bit pissed?
I don't really know.
I know.
And I'm not trying to say it's anything, you know, to denigrate her show. I just was, it's just a funny, just kind of an odd little piece. And you just don't know. You don't know who's hooked up with who. You know, I don't know.
Well, I can assure everyone out there, I ain't getting a check. You know, although the people who defend Barack Obama at all costs, he's harder on him. He's harder on Obama than the Republicans are. You know what? Somebody's got to be, Sandra. Somebody's got to talk a little bit of truth where this is concerned.
Well, I don't, you know, I do think there must, at this point, there has to be a level of desperation in the White House, right?
Well, wouldn't you feel a little Carter breeze blowing through the West Wing? I mean, my God, not to belabor something that's wholly trivial, but this business of backing down on the night he wanted to give a speech?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is that. I mean, it's so ridiculous. I just thought, oh my God,
gutless. No, gutless.
Yeah, but totally over the top gutless, though. You see what I'm saying? It was so godless, I was taken aback by it. That's what I'm saying. It was really...
It wasn't your usual everyday Obama street gutless. This was a special brand of it.
It was some Gone with the Wind type of gutless. You understand what I'm saying? Took me back there. I was like, good Jesus. What's going on, you know?
Toaster for Gone with the Wind reference.
Listen, it just had the feel about it, and it's just like, dude. What are you doing? Where is Dave Chappelle, Black Bush? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding.
Has
anybody seen him alive lately?
Yeah, he's touring. He's doing some sort of tour with some other crazy ass, what is that one comedian? Damn it. Just a couple of really funny guys. They were doing this, they're doing this tour. They're actually playing at the Shore Amphitheater or somewhere out here in California, so... Yeah, he's around.
No, I'm just glad to know that. I mean, well.
Yeah, but I don't really know. I don't know what to think of Obama at this point. And it's, I mean, what do we have? We have a year and what?
Yeah, and see, I don't want to be a big baby about this, all this. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm done. Because I'm too much of a political grown-up for that.
Well,
No, I got no problem saying, yeah, if nothing else, I'll send a damn message in the primary. That's May of 2012.
Right.
And he will receive, you know, he'll get the nomination in West Virginia because he'll be the only one on the ballot.
I do think that, you know, the one bright spot is that you're starting to see some, not pushback, but some going over his head, because the New York Times, they've been hitting some hard-ass editorials recently. Have you noticed?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You know, this whole sort of resentment of the poor, that editorial was on hit. They went after the whole CEOs getting more paid than what the fuck they pay in taxes.
That was a mind-boggling little statistic, wasn't it?
Hello. I was just like, oh, wow. And so the New York Times, you know, is sort of, and the one headline they had today was, oh, my God, grow up. They were talking about this sort of squabbling with the speech business.
Yeah.
So he will say, he will back down against Boehner and compete with the football game? Hello, what the fuck? Why would you be competing with a football game? You see what I'm saying?
At this point, I'm watching the game.
Well, exactly. And so that's what I'm saying. Oh, anyway.
But see, that the other side of this is that the PR arm of the White House, Sandra, and I don't want to take up too much of your time if you got to go, this PR arm is working hard. This report out that says the White House has a new thing called We the People program. Anyone with an idea or a cause can go to the White House website, make a public pitch for support. If the idea gets 5,000 backers in 30 days, said White House spokeswoman Sandra Abravaya, there we go, a working group of policy officials will respond. Well, okay, sure. I mean, because you know what? We can have an. I guarantee you, if this news goes out, there can be a 5,000 signature, no end mountaintop removal yesterday petition there, 3 days from now or 3 days from whenever it goes live. Anybody think that that's going to happen though? How about a 5,000 or 50,000 signature petition saying, reconsider the smog regulations at the peril of your presidency.
I heard some of David's call, and he was suggesting that what people don't care enough about the environment or
he's suggesting these issues aren't real to people because it hasn't become painful for people.
I guess, but, you know, maybe because I'm in California and, you know, the smog that shit was real. It was horrific for decades until it wasn't. And people don't want to go back. You understand? When you get clear, when you're able to breathe and shit, you kind of like that. So I guess if it's abstract only in the form of that it's a policy that people don't really understand, but the reality of clean air is everyone wants that, right?
Well, yeah, that's something that my good friend Vernon Haltom often says. As a person who breathes air and drinks water, and that's what it boils down to. We are people who drink water and breathe air.
Okay, so it doesn't come down to him being back caving. It comes down to him making a choice because he could get on the TV and say, to explain to people, we need to increase the air quality standards because X amount of people won't die and we all want clean air. I mean, that's pretty simple to announce at your podium. And I know, as David said, he may have to do it 12,000 times, but yeah, oh well, it is an argument that he can win. This is a thing.
Yeah, that's where I get lost, Sandra. It's
right.
Not like this is a tough argument to make.
Right.
You know, my fellow American somewhere out there tonight is an American who will die if these regulations do not go forward.
Right.
And
right.
There is not one single corporate share dividend worth a human life, and there's not a million of them either.
But once again, see, and it was, I think it was on Sam Cedar's show today where he played a part of a speech of Roosevelt that I hadn't heard before, but Roosevelt was making fun, just hooping it up about the dumbass Republicans and how they want to take care of Social Security and everything for you. I got to find this speech. And the man was just, he was laying the Republicans out to waste.
And that wasn't the same as the I welcome their hatred speech,
was
it?
No, this was something different. He was just talking about how
No, he sat there. He sat there. Now, we're talking about a man who couldn't even walk.
No, but he.
And he sat there in that chair and he needled their asses.
I was like, oh my God, just to hear it. And so the problem with Obama is that there is no enemy for him. You see, he can't look at things in that way. Whereas a Roosevelt didn't have no problem saying, you know what, people, the American people, these people over here, they want to fuck you up, basically.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you just got some email in from Renee Louise.
Mm.
She's listening live. Mostly she listens in delay, but she wanted to get a question to you. She said, I'm wondering if you might be able to ask Sandra if she knows anything about the major foreclosures I've been hearing about that are supposedly going to happen, I believe, around the end of next month, something like $2 trillion in defaults that are supposed to go down in Europe.
Yes, oh.
The result of which is most likely to be a global depression.
Yeah, no, listen, I also heard other people talking about that madness, and I don't mean, you know, just any other people. I mean, like, Rubini or what is it, Dr. Doom, and you know, there's another. Yeah, I heard something about that, and I think that what they're talking about are those, you know, my favorite thing, those credit default swaps,
right.
Derivatives, the bet. This is the reason why they keep propping up Greece. You know, you sit there, you think, well, why she just let this go, and then you find out the background, which is all these credit default swaps, and I think that's what's the woman you talked about? That sent in a question?
Oh, Renee Louise, yeah.
Renee, I think that's what she is referring to. Now, I don't know of anything definitive, but I've also heard that there's some things that are due real soon in Europe that they can't manage. So I don't know. I was looking at the state of Italy, just politically, it's unraveling. You know, Berlusconi is sort of, he can't hold it together. But the banks, yeah. No, I mean, a lot of people are thinking that something real bad's going to happen in the fall.
Well,
I mean, no, really bad. Remember, always keep in mind that all the debt was transferred from the banks to the government in 2008, okay?
Yeah.
So where are the prescriptions going to come from this time around?
Where is there left for it to come from?
So that's why, you know, you're probably starting to hear these kind of.
But yet, like I mentioned, you know, that was worse news than, well, for some of us at least, that was worse news than it was, even though it got some play yesterday. That story about the solar factory that went belly up in California with a bunch of federal loan guarantees.
Yeah, but there's also some corruption in the Obama administration tied up with that story too. I don't know if you, you know, there's some background to that with a few.
Little back scratching.
Bundlers, fundraisers for Obama that got some sweetheart deals and that shit collapsed. I mean, I don't really know how far it's going to go, but apparently.
Well, how long will it take Daryl Issa to get some subpoenas out on that?
Exactly. I'm telling you, that's a story to keep your eye out on. I was reading a little bit about it and I thought, that don't sound right. So, I don't know, but the financial thing is interesting. You know, if you pay attention to the little signals like there's this intrabank, the loans that the banks do with each other, the overnight stuff.
Yeah.
All those signals are like they were before Lehman and worse. That's why people are freaking out. All the signals are worse now.
Yeah, same shit, different day. Is that?
Yeah, but it's worse because once again, remember, there is no provisions for bailout. I mean, the governments really can't do it, and China is looking like it might have a hard landing coming up too. Maybe not next year, but 2013. That shit is coming undone, too. So, yeah, no, it ain't, you know.
Well, when the economy over here goes south, the ability to prop that one up with relentless, ceaseless manufacturing growth has to be the last domino to fall, doesn't it?
Well, see, Europe is the sort of linchpin. Remember, it's, what is it, 560 million people. It's the largest economic bloc in the world. All the manufacturing from China back and forth is because of Europe. You see what I'm saying? The interconnectedness of it is stunning. So if Europe completely slows down because it's already slowing down, like Germany did grew a 1.0%. I mean, you can't have it. You can't have Germany, which is in control of Europe, let's just say what it is,
yeah,
growing at 1%. That's a problem. And, you know, China slowing down at the same time. I don't know, Bob. You know,
every time we get into a discussion, Sandra, that's predicated upon unlimited growth or sustained growth at X percentage, there's just some part of me that says, maybe it's because I spent so much time listening to people talking about sustainability in environmental terms. There, I'm using the word. 5%, 4%, 6%. You know, China's chugged along at what, 9?
Well, no, but you realize
you can't do that forever.
No, but you realize that whole apparently, you know, we have been subpar growth since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, if you look at it and all the macro info. So, you know, this is all just kind of coming home to roost. That's why this slowdown is just not some sort of secular type of business.
Well, does today's big announcement of the great big bank lawsuit, does that play into any of this? Is this trying to get in there before the crap can hit the fan? I mean, what?
I don't know. I don't know because everything is so made up and magical because Bank of America, you see the state of that? That shit is scary because it really is falling apart. When Buffett bought into that, it wasn't so much, it was desperate. And they also, did I tell you they sold half of their stake in the Chinese concern? So
right.
Bank of America is in trouble. They keep losing. Their stock is going to be worth nothing soon. So where are they going to get the capital? Well, who's going to give them that?
Because we're all fresh out of bailout. I mean,
well, unless they do it secretly, because politically, ain't nobody going to be having the Bank of America getting bailed out again. See, this is also what the so-called leaders are facing now—a populace that is like, "Oh hell, motherfucker, no, you ain't going to bail them out again." We also have that.
Yeah, and that's also the same mindset behind we're also not gonna have any real, because you know if you take into account that the stimulus was half tax breaks on the in the first place,
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah.
You know, no, we're never gonna have any I don't even know what this speech he's gonna give is, because there's no, how are you gonna create jobs when you have already put the government's foot in a bucket and tied both hands behind your back? I mean, am I making any sense?
Oh yeah, no, not
what's,
really
what's
that,
left
but,
to create with?
No, but when you have, you know, incentives for companies to ship jobs out, they still haven't rolled that back. The, you know, capital gains tax is still low, and they keep threatening to lower it. You know, there is.
Oh yeah, what is it? 5 of the Republican presidential candidates are now on board, officially calling for not a rollback, but an outright end to the capital gains tax.
Yeah, and you know, we thought what was so sickening about that letter you were reading for the EPA is the whole meme that Obama has latched on of the the environment being uncertain for business. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I can't even believe that he keeps embracing that. It's as bad as the
Well, I mean, it's snake oil.
The government needs to tighten its belt, hell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's some other creep today who said, we've got, I know, it was a member of Congress from New York. Her name is Irene, her name is Representative Nan Hayworth.
Oh, Nan, yeah.
Yeah, in the wake of Irene beating the shit out of her district.
Nan, what's that bitch saying now?
Yeah, she says, here it is. Hayworth said she would only vote to replenish the federal disaster fund if new spending was offset by budget cuts. She said those cuts should come from non-defense discretionary spending. And here's that. This is that George H.W. Bush doesn't know what a barcode scanner moment is. Hayworth likened her position to a family skipping vacation if it was overwhelmed by bills. We have to control spending. There's no question about it.
Listen. The whole idea that you have a party that is suggesting any time there's a disaster or some emergency that the help has to come at the expense of some offset, we are in some sort of Alice in Wonderland. And listen, you know I'm not a Christie fan, but hey, homeboy is starting to wake the fuck up.
You know, and he's almost big enough and mean enough to go and squash Eric Cantor like a damn bug.
Like, come on, let's go. You know what I mean? And when he stood up for that judge he appointed, I said, oh, listen, I'm not a fan, but I will have to go along with that incident and the cancer shit.
Oh,
and
yeah, Christy, you know, I mean. Christy
will scare them fools.
Well, yeah, I get the idea that where the disaster relief stuff's concerned, he's about one piss off away from get the helicopter and the ball bats. We're going to Virginia.
Right. I mean, because, you know, Cantor is a disgusting human being, except in 2004, when his district needed it, all of a sudden there was no offset being talked about. I mean, these people are despicable. He's a horror show, that Cantor. God, he's awful.
And again, it's one of those places where you go back to, you know, who the hell kind of people lives in his district?
Well, there's some dumbass people because, I mean, he's just a horrible person. I don't even know what else to say about him. And that Nan. And stupid. What is he talking about?
Yeah, I mean, the idea that getting slammed by a hurricane is just like not being able to go on vacation?
No, but also, once again, the government being sort of constrained all of a sudden. It's like, since when? Isn't that what government is for? I mean, it's just absurd. They don't even know what the... They don't even know what government is for these people who are in charge, and that's a real worry.
You know what? I was gonna mention this anyway. On Reverbo's recommendation a long time ago, I finally got around to reading a magnificent book called Altered Carbon by a guy named Richard K. Morgan. It's kind of a cyberpunk meets murder mystery noir kind of thing, and it's all dystopian 500 years in the future.
Yes.
But again, it's 500 years in the future because it makes it that much easier to read it and go, oh, no, that's really today, isn't it, Richard? Because it is. And, you know, you see these pictures of roads completely washed away in Vermont and New York and places like that, and you think, so in Republican world, we're just going to put up a sign that says, road ends here, good luck.
Yeah, no, that's the mentality, and it's just stuck.
Because that's how you get to dystopian futures, Sandra.
Yeah, no, when there is no political will to rescue and repair and rebuild. Because it's stupid, because even in the face of disaster, there's a stimulus involved. They don't even want to embark on that type of stimulus. It's mind-boggling.
And, I mean, do you remember those studies of urban blight from years past? It was really weird because they got to where they could predict how quickly a neighborhood would devolve into chaos and dystopia based on the number of broken windows on any given street and how long the windows remained unrepaired. You know, it's like once you get past three broken windows, the whole thing, the property values collapse and everything just goes done. And you know, I was just in D.C. You can see that stuff there. You know, you can see the demarcation between upwardly mobile young white folks and folks who actually work to keep the city going.
Yeah,
I mean, it's plain as day.
Yeah, I was amazed when I was in D.C. because, of course, me, I'm going to go to where the folks are. And it was just crazy, the difference. I'm telling you.
I went up this one road. We were meeting at a church. It was called St. Stephen and the... It was an Episcopal affair. St. Stephen and the Incarnation, or what I think that's what it was. And we went up, wound up going through this one neighborhood, and I just saw this telling thing. One black dude standing with his hands on a wall, six rollers, six cruisers from the DCPD to take care of one dude. And you're going, And meanwhile, you know, up and down these streets, I've gotten to where I look for grocery stores and gas stations. Because there wasn't any. The only grocery store was an organic market. And I'm guessing there weren't many people living around there who could pay $16 a pound for grass-fed, free-range, organic Montana beef.
Oh, my God, or $2 for a piece. Yeah, I know.
Right, yeah.
Oh, no.
But you know what? Every three storefronts was a liquor store.
Yeah, no, D.C. is a trip.
And but, I mean, that's not just D.C., Sandra. You know, that's inner anywhere.
Oh, I know, no, I know. I just was just thinking about it, though. But the sort of disparities are just absolutely stunning in D.C. And when you match that with the idea that people don't have no representation, you're like, what is this, plantation economy much?
Exactly. I mean,
it's just really sort of... You know, the plantation economy model is alive and well in D.C. That's what.
And you know, down there in the federal area, it's all beautiful, soaring Roman Revival architecture.
Right.
And you start getting out, and the little things that have been turned into tony little condos and stuff. And the things that have been torn down for McMansion apartments, and then you get out there where the real people live. And again, no gas. You might have a gas station. You ain't got no grocery store. You got your five to one liquor stores to convenience stores. The occasional little bodega. And
then you had the specter of Michelle Rhee wrecking havoc. You know, she just destroyed the public school system while she was there. I mean. D.C. is just, you know, it's like an experimentation on all the folks there with their various schemes. Yeah, no, it's out. I was kind of appalled.
And it's, you know, I remember being there with Guy James and him going, you know, Bob, there's parts of this city I just love. And then I start thinking about what goes on in the parts of the city that I love and I hate it.
I was sort of, like I said, I was just sort of shocked. You know, we go to different parts and it's just kind of like, schizophrenia much, and I'm on a constant lookout for crabs, you know, back to Pentagon City, and then you go out to, it was pretty bizarre when my little trip to D.C., I have to say. But you go up there a lot, don't you?
Lately I have been. Looks like I'll be going back again, and, you know, this was really inspiring to get to see this tar sands action protest. I'm so glad I got to go. And so thankful to Cold River Mountain Watch for sending me.
Well, is the protest, is it a set protest? Is it over with this weekend?
I think it closes out this weekend.
Okay.
But every day for 2.5 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever it's going to wind up being, every day they've been down there. The people who are going to be there that day, they rally, they empower themselves, they get in a circle, they talk about why they're there. They very peacefully walk over and sit their ass down, and then the cops come out. And it's a very, and you know what I mean when I say this, it is a very stylized thing, like opera, you know? And the cops come out, and they crime scene tape off an area, and they bring in the vehicle so nobody can get a good photograph. And you certainly can't go over and interview anybody. And there are elements of it that are truly disturbing. You know, this thing has generated $100,000 in fines paid to the United States Park Police.
Well, the thing is, though, hasn't it generated a lot of PR for the cause, though? I mean, isn't
it? Oh, heck yeah, absolutely.
I mean, even if he signs off of it, isn't it, it must have made more and more people aware, because the only reason why I know about the whole Alberta tar sand pit was from that sub-media TV a year ago was covering that, and I was horrified by the photos of it. So, but a lot of people must be sort of getting, this must be real new to people.
And it's, because we were there for Mountaintop Removal Day, and it was really important, and it was really well received that, you know, oppressed people from Appalachia would come up to stand with oppressed people from Canada.
The Canadians have been sort of, they've been upset about this for a while.
Well, because you can look at a photograph, for instance, Jeff Biggers had a piece on Alternet and Huffington Post, too, I think. A photograph of where they're doing tar sands extraction looks a hell of a lot like a mountaintop removal operation. It's just goddamn devastation as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, I know the picture. I was really quite.
But I mean, it's people coming from. The one woman from Amherst, Massachusetts, 84 years old, the cancer victim from Minnesota, people from from Florida, people from West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, people from all up and down where the pipeline's going to go, and from other from other parts as well. And. Hopefully there's momentum getting built, and I hope nobody gets discouraged by the fact that, because I swear, Sandra, I'm not, I'm not paranoid. There's no black helicopter outside my window or anything. But this announcement today was, it was specifically designed to poke a finger in the eye of these people.
Yeah, no, it's really disturbing. I mean, is this true that, still 500,000 people or so are still without electricity behind this hurricane? It's
that was like, the last I read, yeah.
It was like Katrina in Vermont, right? What the hell? What's happening? How are these people getting any help? I just was wondering.
Well, you just sit and wait. And it's not like Florida where the smart people know how to deal with a hurricane. Leave. Vermont got Katrina.
This is sort of rivers that, it sounds really awful. I mean, I heard that bridges were washed away and communities are trapped. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
They have to use helicopters to drop food and stuff.
And, of course, that costs money.
Well, and they have to cut somewhere before they get it, right?
Right.
It's just beyond absurd. Well, listen, I've gone on for way too much, and go Michael Vick.
Why not?
Anyway, listen, have a good weekend.
All right, take care, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
Yeah, anything to keep Vince Young out of the game, and I'm sure he feels like that, too. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up?
October 26th, 2010.
Yes.
That's when it became very, very real to me. That's the date my husband died from COPD.
I know.
And I used to watch him breathe. And his entire chest would suck in as he tried to suck in air. He didn't have an excess ounce of weight on him because he literally burned himself up trying from the energy he had to use, just trying to suck in enough air to keep himself alive.
It's a brutal thing to behold. And for Barack Obama to say, if that happens for 10 or 15,000 more people a year, that's okay. And I'm not trying to be an ass, Susan. You know me well enough to know that I'm not. But isn't that what this administration is saying?
Yeah.
It's been going on. It'll keep going on. What's another few thousand people till 2013?
Yeah, and at the same time, a self-confessed war criminal is gleefully romping all over the airwaves, confessing and reconfessing to war crimes, And the Justice Department is doing what? Nothing.
No, they're raiding Gibson guitars. That's why I said this is just, you know, this is Ashcroft 2.0. This is, you know, this is Chong's bongs all over again.
Well, I got a word for dear old Barack Obama. It was used in the 60s. For people who would sell out, shall we say.
And it is?
Actually, it was a two-word term, and one of them was Tom.
Yeah.
Need I go further?
No, I think not. And I don't, but you know what? I don't even, I'm not being cantankerous. Is that what it is?
I don't know whether it's from the, whether it's due to an actual sellout, or whether, like you said, he's totally spineless.
I mean, the possibility exists that he, and I don't know how to say it or re-say it or say it in a way that makes it more easily obtainable. It's entirely possible he's doing exactly what he wants.
Yeah. Now, I didn't hold Donald's death against Barack Obama because Donald was exposed to asbestos when he was a young man many, many years ago. So, you know, that's not something that, you know, Barack Obama had anything to do with. But these regulations, yeah, he does. And for that,
and isn't there a bit of hubris involved as well, Susan, to say that we can wait till when he says we can wait till 2013 to do it? Isn't that him signaling to the rest of us, oh, you're going to vote for me?
No, I'm not.
I mean, it.
That simple. I'm not. I won't vote for a Republican, but I won't vote for him.
And I mean, I'm certain as sunrise, where I stand on the primary. I know I am, and I realize that that is largely a symbolic act.
Yes.
But you know what? If enough people engaged in that symbolic act, he would get a message loud and clear.
Yes, that would be one way of waking them up, because these people have got. I cannot. They had to have studied. Nobody is born that dumb.
But is it dumb, Susan? Or is it, I ask again,
they sat down and
willful.
Decided this is the way they wanted to be.
They want to be pro-business.
Yeah. Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt, and I don't want to do it again.
There you go.
Now, it's whether or not he wakes up depends on whether or not I actively work against him. But as it is now, I'm going to...
Well, but that's the thing. We've got time now, you know, little teeny tiny radio show. Yeah, sure. But ideas can spread.
Yeah.
Don't vote for him in the primary.
It doesn't hurt anything.
It doesn't hurt anything. And the numbers... and then we need some smart people out there looking at the number, at his primary numbers contested in 08 versus primary numbers in 12,
mm-hmm.
and looking at the primary numbers in 12, look at the number of people who vote in the Democratic individual Democratic primaries versus the number of people who vote for him. An incumbent president should always be the lead vote getter on any primary ballot. If he is not, then he's got it's time for him to have a little come to Jesus moment. Make sense?
Oh yeah. I just, I really hope it will do some good. I'm willing to try it.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I come from a tradition where one of the big verses is, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And that's what we've got to do. We have got to, you know, because there's a lot of people that knocked on doors for him. Now it's time to knock on his damn door and see if he'll do anything for us.
Well, I prefer the image from a TV program called NCIS. Mark Harmon whapping some guy up back of the head to get his attention.
Well, yeah, there's the slap the mule kind of.
Yeah, get his attention first. The only question is, how big of a 2x4 do we want to use? There is, Move On has just initiated a deal where you can start your own petition. I wonder if perhaps we shouldn't start a petition saying, hey, we're not going to be voting for Obama in the primary. We are going to vote in the primary. We're just going to leave the president's office blank.
Should they?
He needs to pay attention to that.
It's about all that's left, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, because I don't want to bum people out completely, if they go up to the main website at
headonradionetwork.com, yes.
Right. On the featured section, there is this thing labeled "The Barbarians Are Coming." And if you click on it, it takes you to a YouTube video. I suggest you play it. It's a giggle.
Oh, good. Barbarians, does this have something to do with Marcus Bachman?
Oh, yeah. And a flash mob.
Lovely.
And it's a definite.
Oh, no. Oh, lost Susan. So go and click on The Barbarians Are Coming at headonradionetwork.com. You know, because we all need a laugh, and the weekend's coming. It's a long weekend. By the way, I will mention that I see no reason why I should not be on the air Monday night. It's not like we're, you know, going off to our second home in Sushore. And many thanks for contributions this evening. Robert, otherwise known as Phase 5. Just dropped a note. He said, I paid the rent. I paid a pink slip for the car. That means in Australia that the car is okay for on-road use. I paid the car registration, the road tax. I paid the third-party compulsory car insurance, hugely up this year. I paid off the Visa. And for some odd reason, I had some money left over. So let's get September off to a good start. Robert says, I slept under a leaky roof for 6 years once. It was a pain every time it rained, so maybe some of this could go there. Robert, some of that will go there. Maybe that's what I'll do this weekend. Get back up on the roof again. Thank you very much, Robert. Thank you also to, Bruce. Thank you to, Jay. Thank you to, Albert. Thank you very much for getting September started. I'm sorry, I said Bruce, I meant Barry. Thank you, Barry. So, let's, in the time we have remaining to us, let's keep going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, happy Friday, Brother Bob.
Well, Brother Albert, I conjured you.
Yes, absolutely. Just like I want to talk to you today about what I had last night, but first, there's got to be a warning because there's going to be some adult language because I'm sick of it. I've had it. And so listener discretion.
Yeah, little Timmy, little Cindy, out of the room.
I'm trying to be nice, but I'm so sick of this shit. And I know how people are upset about the whole, the smog and regulations and that shit. It just spins my ass as well. But when he capitulated to putting off the job speech. My rectum imploded. I could barely breathe. So that last night, I went and I had a nice dream. Now maybe you remember, but I don't know about you, but maybe you do. You remember when I used to tell you how I used to dream about George Bush and I'd be chasing him? And
yep.
That's when it all started really, I mean, you know, and I know this is a little crazy, but that's when it really started to fall apart for him. It really did. That's when the wheels started to really come off. It was when I started chasing. So last night I had a dream, and I brought my family to Barack Obama's family. He lived in this fucked up house. I mean, I'm telling you, it had a crazy shrine in it and a this and a that, and the floor was all messed up where the two girls, you know, because, you know, we introduced his girls to my girls and so on and so forth. And he looked at me, and it was funny. Michelle didn't even understand why she was there. I have very strange dreams. They're very lucid. And she's like, why am I here? What are we doing? We're going to eat? And Barack, who just had to come in from getting yelled at from his across the street wheelchair stuck with an oxygen mask old white woman, and you know, she was yelling at him about trimming his hedges or something. He comes in and we sit at his desk and he's like, what do you want from me? And I say, I want you to tell the Republicans fuck you instead of telling us the same. That's what I want. That's what we want to hear. Isn't that what we want to hear, everyone? I mean, am I lost on this? Or
No. I think you're right there. We're tired of being told that, and we'd like to see somebody else get told that for a change, yes.
Sit down and shut up and listen. That's what we want. Now, I'm going to continue. I'm not going to stop, whatever the hell it does probably as much as voting does, so whatever. But, you know, I mean, come on. What do you mean jobs? What job? You know what job we need. You're going to sit here and pull tar sands and open up the fucking the smokestacks and whatever else, to deregulate more of them vampire cannibals on Wall Street, and you're going to sit there and then you're not going to talk about solar panels? What? Don't tell me. And that's the other thing. You know, you're talking David, da-da-da-da. You talk about cost. I hate that shit. I can't stand, just like you guys were saying, I can't, what fucking cost when the whole planet is a crater? When it's just a smoldering husk of a desert? What cost? What the hell does cost mean? I don't understand that.
See, I remember when John Fox very trenchantly observed, no planet, no economy.
Yeah. Who are these people talking about? I had to teach my kids. I say, you know, you say all these sayings to your kids, and you think that they catch it. You know. You just do, you know, because you say it. You know, it's like, you know, so I was talking about cutting the nose off to spite the face. I can't think of another analogy that's better than that in terms of what we're doing with our economy. We're cutting our nose off. Actually, we're cutting our face off. We're cutting our goddamn head off. We're cutting the rest of our body at the ankles off to spite the whole thing. What the hell is this? It's so stupid. It's so outrageous. I mean,
we're cutting our nose off to spite our lungs. How's that?
I'm still going to vote for this son of a bitch because I'm tired of his ass. But I'm still going to vote for him because I couldn't even imagine Rick Perry. We'd have to. You need a beeper, Bob. It'd be beep 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 beep. It'd be like watching Clark Ramsey over there on American television. It would just be a one long big continuous beep. And a beep, and a beep. And can you imagine? We can't survive that. There's no way. Now, I don't know. Maybe, you know, I remember I said a while ago, maybe Bush should have had a third term.
Just to finish the job?
He should have had a third term. We said that way back when he was still, you know, halfway through his second term. He should have had a third term. We should have let him. Because he needs it. And Dick Cheney running around. You know, the undead, don't talk shit to me, undead. He's an undead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yes, he is. He is.
Zombie. I don't want to hear it. Shut up. I'm going to get the garlic and the goddamn sun. I mean, I don't understand what why isn't he in prison? Why is he sitting there laughing now?
Well, because we have to look forward and not back.
No. Barack better do. He better pull a 280. Because I don't know what in the hell is going on in this planet. Because does he know what's going on in this planet? Because I think we're on top of it. I don't know about you. I think we've pretty much.
No, I feel like we've got a pretty good generalized understanding, Albert.
Yeah, I think we've got a good grip on this whole deal, and they're doing the other thing.
And, I mean, okay, can I have a moment to kind of go off the rails for a second?
Bob, you know, please do.
You act and you speak from that place, Albert, that is intensely concerned and lovingly worried about a pair of precious little girls that are the only connection, if I understand your theology right, you will ever have with immortality. And that's where I come from, too. I'm one step further into the game because there's grandchildren involved now. And I'm not competing.
I can't catch up.
But you'll get there someday. Trust me.
I'll get there. I don't worry. I'm a turtle.
But the point is, believe me, this rabbit didn't mean to get there that fast. The point is that, you know, when you've got those little people, unless you are possessed of some thing inside you that says, well, it's going to be like that for them, but for mine it's going to be okay.
Mm.
You know, Sasha and Malia are beautiful, adorable, intelligent, precious. And they got to live on the planet with your daughters and my granddaughters and my daughters and son. Now, they may never meet each other, but they still have to share the planet with them.
Mm-hmm. They breathe the same air and drink the same water.
And, you know, it's D.C., and there's coal-fired power plants around there. And that's the, you know, what he's screwing with in the name of Jobs is his daughter's own ability to go on being air breathers. I'm stuck. I'm licked. I don't know, you know, how does that information go in one ear and get lost? Or go in both ears and just hit a wall? You know, I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry, girls. If I was Michelle, and I should probably leave this up to one of the beautiful women who call this program. If I was Michelle, Albert, door to the bedroom in the residence would be locked, and it would be, you sleep on the couch, you don't like our girls breathing clean air. Well, you just get on out there and you breathe, you know, you breathe some of that crap, and we'll talk about it in the morning if I feel like talking to you in the morning. Because Jesus Christ, they're parents. And they're not going to get to live in the Logan's Run Dome. And it wasn't that fun a place anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, brother.
No. I don't know. It's not anything that he's a parent. We voted him in. We voted him in. We did. And I know he's done some things that, you know, background structural shit that really isn't glamorous. But things that sort of needed to be done, you know. You can't say he hasn't done anything. You just have to look at his record and say, wow, he's done a whole bunch of things. But now he's doing these big things, the glistening and sparkly things. And it's like, what? What? Who the fuck are you talking about? What is this? Where did this come from? When did we tell you that this is what we wanted? That we didn't. We want solar panels. We want windmills. We want this. This is what, not even what we fucking want. It doesn't mean anything to want it. This is what we need. We don't want.
We require it.
We require it. Because we live in a society that requires electricity. Now, we have all this great news of solar becoming on par for cost that petroleum does, you know, when oil, you know, and that's what the subsidies of oil. Wait, so solar is that cheap now, and we do need this, and we do need these jobs, and I know that the pieces are all there, Bob. It's one plus one plus one plus one. You know, we don't have to get ridiculous in terms of science. And then, you know, and I remember I told you a long time ago that they weren't going to find any Higgs boson. And you know what the LHC came out and said? We're not finding it. There's no more supersymmetry. No, it's not happening. They're going to have to go all the way back, and they're going to have to relook at all that stuff. And that's good. That's a beautiful thing about science, is science will go, whoa, 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 finally, we're going to have to really turn around the other way. Politics is...
And
like
who's going to... And you know, just to extend that inquiry, Albert, who's going to fund that science?
Well, that's... There we go in the cost again. Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, I'm not trying to be an asshole about this, but you know what? ExxonMobil is not going to fund that rethinking of everything we think we know.
True, because then we'll realize, though, we can tap into the magnetic field. And but, you know, there's all that jazz. But, I mean, I don't understand who he thinks he's representing. I know he's a president of all Americans, and it's a beautiful thing to be president of all Americans. So lead by example. Stop bending over and coddling these people. What are you doing? Why are you behaving this way?
And again, it goes back to what Sandra's saying about this is a winnable argument. You show up in front of the American people and say, everybody, you may have forgotten, but this is my daughter Sasha. This is my daughter Malia. And you've got kids and grandkids, and some of you have great-grandkids just like them. You know what? I want them to be able to breathe. How do you lose that argument?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you're talking to somebody who, you know, I sledgehammer people that try to argue against that for a living. So, I mean, you can't. There's no way you can lose it because it's black and white. It's right there. Maybe they need to be waterboarded. I don't know. You know, waterboarded with some coal sludge water. Can you breathe this? Because that's what they're going to turn the friggin' air into.
Yeah.
Just an oily film of particulates and goddamn carcinogens. And it's like, you know, we're in the food, you know, you sit there, you talk about, we got processed food up the yin-yang, and we all know it's not good for us. You know, when the tortillas have 35 ingredients in it, and the peanut butter's got 45 ingredients in it, it's not peanut butter, and it's not tortillas, and it's probably not really good for you to eat. And this is, you know, why, you know, we got the diseases and the this and that. Why are you making such a simple thing that when you do it simply and you do it with care, it's the best thing that you could ever put in your mouth? When you do something right, it's delicious. You don't have to make it complex. Pizza crust is flour, yeast, salt, and olive oil. That's it. That's it. That's all you need.
Yeah, those tortillas, masa flour, and water.
Water. Hey, you don't need 100,000 things in it. You don't need to sit here and make these things. This is not, I
don't need any maltodextrin 35.
No, why is there red coloring in my tortilla? What the hell is that?
Well, because actual red corn is a little bit more expensive than red coloring, Albert, but... Yeah.
I mean, we better get our asses and heads wired together because, they sit there and they talk this and that and this. We're only a couple of disasters away from complete collapse.
Right, that now, dystopia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and who's gonna be calling the shots when that happens? You know, it's like I love when people talk, oh, he believes in the Constitution. You know, I had this discussion. Belief in the Constitution. The Constitution is just a framework, isn't it? There's not really a lot of ideas there. That's not no grand statement of belief. That's the Declaration. And see, people always muddle it up and coddle it up. You know, the Declaration, and I've been, you know, from the very beginning, I told you, that's always my favorite. I've always had a little soft spot in my heart for that because that's the one with the ideas. That's the philosophy of this country. That's the government's goddamn job, according to the Founding Fathers, is to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So that's their job, to protect life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right, and by the time you get to the Constitution, in fact, I was having this conversation with my buddy Bo Webb the other day, once you understand that the difference between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution lies in the fact that in the period between the Declaration of Independence, the Revolution, the Articles of Confederation, and the framing of the Constitution, and I would never have known this without Dr. Bill and the Prism series, once you realize that the reason for the Constitution is because democracy was breaking out all over, and that we were just having a little too much of it, and we went from life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence to life of the rich people, liberty of the rich people, and pursuit of happiness for rich people. That's basically what's embodied in the Constitution. And I refuse to get all squishy about it. I mean, I live in this realistic world where elements behave according to their natures, and so do governments. And what you had was the money getting nervous. And thus you get the Constitution. And that's why people like Jefferson were saying, wait a minute, shouldn't we just go ahead and amend it right now and put in a little something about government not trampling on people's rights? Because that's all the Constitution was about. And you can read all the Federalist Papers. Federalist 10, where Madison punts and says, we're going to have political parties, screw it. And offers this pathetic justification for it. But, you know, it's article, you know, it sets up an executive, a legislative, and a judiciary, and does it in such a way as to make sure none of those entities can upset the financial and economic apple cart of the well-to-do.
And it's all just a ride.
Yeah, by the way, Jeanette is really, really down with your idea of waterboarding these bastards with tar sand sludge.
I hate to sound like, some sort of left-wing tyrant or something, but my God, what is it going to take? I'm trying to talk reason to them. I'm trying. What do you want? All right, then here, breathe it. What do you want? You're making us do it. You're going to destroy everything. Tar sands is not petroleum, you fucking idiots. It is not. Oh, all right, fine. Look what you had to do to get it. It's not like when you...
Albert, it's the same. It's roughly the same dodge as liquid coal fuel.
Yeah.
You know, where you've... Let's go ahead and get alimentary, if we will. It's roughly the same process as what is required to create high fructose corn syrup. If you start with something that isn't even remotely what it is that you hope to get out of the end process, and you have to expend massive amounts of energy and time and resources to get it from point A to point C, and the only thing that you get as an end result is profit, and it, because, I mean, God dog it. You know,
I'm sorry.
I mean, I would be open to the argument, Albert. I would be open to the argument if somebody, because, okay, I guarantee you the price of a gallon of gasoline will drop by $1.50 if we just have this tar sands pipeline. I am not an unreasonable man.
Yeah.
But they can't make that promise. They can't even make that allegation. They can't allege that the price of a gallon of gasoline will drop by a nickel. Well, all they can guarantee is that they are going to make massive corporate profits out of this, and that a handful of people will have, and I do mean a handful of people, will have a job building this godforsaken pipeline, and then the company will look at them and go, we'll see ya.
Yeah, this is the Koch brothers pipeline.
Oh, yeah, they're going to get stupid richer out of it, yes.
Yeah,
and in light of the fact that they own Georgia Pacific, you know, if there's a big spill between those 20 miles distant valves, I guess we'll use some Bounty goddamn paper towels to soak it all up with. And everybody wins, and everybody makes a profit, and everybody has a share.
Oh, filth. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's. I don't know. I didn't know it was this complicated in terms of.
It's only complicated if you make it that way, Albert.
Well, they're making it complicated. They're the ones that are sitting there saying, you know, like, for example, let's say we did have solar panels everywhere. What would we do for fuel? You know, if we had solar panels everywhere, we'd probably wind up having an excess of electricity during the day. You know, we want that. We want that surplus. Maybe we can turn those electrons into splitting some oxygen from, oxygen and hydrogen from water, and we can, you know, start, you know, because you can run an internal combustion engine on hydrogen. You know, you need to change some gaskets or whatever, but you can do it. That way we wouldn't have to scrap our entire vehicles, our 300 million people, there's probably 700 million vehicles. You know, we wouldn't have to scrap all of them worldwide. We could still run on hydrogen, then you wouldn't need an oil change anymore because there's no carbon to make it dirty and, you know, it would run nice if we could do these things. I mean, I want to see some vision. You know, that was the one thing, that's the one thing separating you, and I, of course, wins of Carter, and I mean, God damn it, you know I want to see Carter have a second term, because we probably wouldn't be having this discussion right now if, and Carter made us disappointed too, and this is the same thing with Obama. That's why he needs a second term. If that son of a bitch, George Bush, gets a second term, Barack Obama gets a second term. He may not be doing everything to make us happy, but he's not doing George Bush. He's no Rick Perry or Michelle Bachmann or Ron Paul or any of these other freaks.
That's why I'm saying I'm laying out of the primary.
He pisses us off because he ain't doing the shit that we know that he needs to get done, but he's not one of them. Well, maybe he is. I don't know. I can't say. I'm going to get him. I'm going to keep haunting his ass, though.
Well, you know, all of this is relatively easy. Again, after he gets done introducing Sasha and Malia, he can run them off the stage, and he can turn sideways to the camera, Albert, and he can pull his ear back and say, I want you to see something here. And he can turn the other way and pull the other ear forward. And see, I don't have any gills. You got any gills out there? All the humans developing gills in the room. Raise your hand. Oh, okay, then we're all going to need to breathe air for a while longer. I know. Got to get out of here, Albert.
Yes, sir, Brother Bob. All right, you have a great weekend.
You have a wonderful weekend, too. I'll be here Monday.
All right, brother.
All right, see ya. Where does the time go? Sorry for the other blinking lights. The tune in on Monday, and hopefully you will be right there in the thick of things. Thanks, everybody. This is my first day back after 3 days away in D.C., and you have made it a wonderful one, despite the frustration. Anybody who begins to sprout gills, send me an email and a photo, okay? Because we can send those to the White House. Hey, look, tell Cass Sunstein it's okay. We're growing gills! All right? Thank you to all of you who have kindly contributed, donated, and given to keep all of this going. We took care of September 1st, 2nd, and 3rd tonight. So that means we will get after it on Monday, and we'll actually be on track. Thank you. And we've got other stuff to go into on Monday as well. A follow-up to the child who was spanked to death. You're not gonna like this. But we have to go there just the same. Thanks to our chat room moderators, Sparky and Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Texas Betsy, our blogger. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer and spiritual advisor, David in Tennessee. Thank you to John Fox, who makes so much of what happens here happens. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Coming up on 10 years that Ben has been keeping liberal talk alive on the Internet.